First of all, the Sue Gray report, is a fixed penalty notice enough if the PM is found to have committed wrongdoing in the police report?
I think the Prime Minister should resign now. I think we've got enough evidence that he's both misled Parliament and broken the rules. But if the police report confirms what I think we all know, then he really will have to go and go immediately. It's against the ministerial code to mislead Parliament. He's clearly done that. It would be outrageous for him to just get away with a fine, given he set the rules for all the rest of us, and we all follow them, and he chose not to.
Last Tuesday, you said a stitch up between the Met leadership and Number 10 will damage our politics for generations, and it looks like it is happening right in front of our eyes. Is that something that you stand by? And can you elaborate on what you mean by that, please?
I totally stand by it. What I really feel for the rank and file police officer. We have some amazing police officers here in Kingston and across the capital, and they need to have the public's trust and confidence. But when the high command in New Scotland Yard behaves so poorly, frankly, then it undermines that. And that's bad for the police, it's bad for everyone else. So, what we've had with the Sue Gray report and the Metropolitan Police is at least four different positions, which is completely chaotic. And first of all, they said they weren't going to investigate because these were past offences. Then they said they might investigate, but they wait for the Sue Gray report. Then they said they would investigate, but the Sue Gray report could be published. And then they changed their mind again and said they'll investigate, but the Sue Gray report couldn't be published. I mean, this is really poor, and it's either complete incompetence or it's something worse. And it's important that we call it out. The Met Police Commissioner's got to explain this rather than just allow us all to be confused and indeed alarmed.
When it comes to the cost of living crisis, it's estimated a quarter of families could be pushed into fuel poverty when the energy regulator raises its price cap today, and that will add around £600 to the average household bill. What's your reaction to that?
Well, as leader of the Liberal Democrats, I've been calling for a package to protect consumers and protect businesses for several months now, because we all knew this was going to happen. And I'm deeply worried. There are millions of people out there who are already struggling with their high energy bills. These increases were totally predictable, and they're going to, I'm afraid, with all the tax rises that the Conservatives are pushing through, make life very difficult for many people. So I've argued for what I call a Robin Hood tax. That's asking the oil and gas companies who are making an absolute fortune with these high gas prices, they should have a windfall tax on them. So some of that money could be given to people who are really struggling with their energy bills. It seems the only fair thing to do. And it's certainly the Liberal Democrat approach to making sure people can get through this winter and get through without being punished by high energy bills.
Is that just a sticking plaster over the problem, though? Because you can do a windfall tax when something like this happens, but would it not be better to make some changes to the systems in the UK so that when prices do go up to this extent, the consumer isn't left with all of the bill?
Well, the long-term solution to this is to move away from gas and go to renewable heat and renewable power. And that's exactly what I did when I was in charge of energy and climate change. Britain now leads the world in offshore wind, and it means we don't actually need as much gas as we would have done. If the Conservatives had continued my policies, if the Conservatives continued Liberal Democrat policies in terms of investing in renewables at the rate we were, and also investing in insulation so people don't need so much gas to heat their homes, we would have saved over £2.5 billion from Britain's heating bills. So the Conservatives, not only are they shoving up taxes, but they have some responsibility for the high heating bills because they failed to take the measures that Liberal Democrats were taking.
What's for Park Station? Is it going to get step-free access soon? Money was approved for this in 2020, but we haven't had much of an update since then, and the bridge is in a rather grim-looking state. Do you have any information about this?
I think there's some good news here. I can't take any credit for this, I have to say. It's my Liberal Democrat colleagues in West Barnes, in Merton, just over the border, out of the borough. And they've got some fantastic councillors. Councillor Hina Bakari, for example, has done a lot of work on this. And they've been told by the railway firms that the outline design stage for step-free access is now has been started. It will be completed next month. And then that detailed design with work on site should be done by the end of the year. That's what I've been told by them. I think it's fantastic news. Liberal Democrats have campaigned in Merton for this for some time. We've been very supportive of them, but they have led the work because it's in Merton. There was some concern in the past that previously, rather complacently, some had said, oh, you can't do this because of Crossrail 2. We need to wait till Crossrail 2. I mean, you'd be waiting for Godot, waiting for a long time if you waited for Crossrail 2. So I'm really pleased that West Barnes Lib Dems have done so well on this, and there is good news that this might get done by the end of the year.
We've got the Kingston International Film Festival this year. How important are the arts to Kingston?
Well, I think it's just fantastically exciting. Kingston is a really creative town and borough. If you look across our history, we've had some fantastic art and indeed scientific and engineering innovation. And I see that in this context. And I think the Kingston International Film Festival, which its inaugural festival starts later this year, the fact that it's going to be able to showcase talent for young and independent filmmakers, I think it's just really exciting. I would urge people to go onto the website and have a look at the plans. I don't know when tickets go on sale, but I'm sure there'll be people queuing for them.
There was a 1.2-kilometre long Hong Kong awareness protest in Kingston, and 1,000 people formed a human chain. There was the message that Hong Kong is not China, and there were fears about freedom of expression and the ability to protest in Hong Kong. So evidently it would appear that this is a big deal to your constituents. What would you say to reassure one of your constituents from Hong Kong who has these fears?
Well, I think we should all be worried about what's happening in Hong Kong. I mean, Britain has a very strong historical relationship with Hong Kong, and the agreement that was put in place was signed by a British government, and that was aimed at keeping democracy in Hong Kong and keeping a free press and all those freedoms that, frankly, Britain underwrote. They are now being taken away by the appalling regime in Beijing, which is frankly treading over democracy and freedom in Hong Kong. And whether there are people from Hong Kong in our area, but frankly anyone who cares about democracy and human rights, I think we do need to get our voice heard. I and my colleagues in Parliament have been raising this issue. My colleague Alistair Carmichael has done a huge amount on this issue. Leila Moran is campaigning, and so my Liberal Democrat colleagues are raising this. I think it's really important we stand up to be counted and prevent this Beijing Communist Party suppression of the rights of people in Hong Kong.
Kingston has spent £30 million putting cycle lanes in under the Go Cycle scheme, and some like Kingston Road and New Malden are not wide enough to accommodate emergency vehicles and a bus and a car to pass at the same time. And our cyclists are being urged to use the centre or the middle of the road. What is the future for this scheme and others like it? And how safe are our roads now they're being used by cars and buses and cyclists and e-scooters and e-bikes, emergency vehicles and pedestrians all at once?
Well, the cycle lane programme came about in Kingston from money provided by actually Boris Johnson when he was the Mayor of London. So it shows it goes back a long way. Mayor Boris Johnson was very keen to promote cycling, and he gave huge amounts of money to boroughs, including Kingston, to put in cycle lanes. And it's just taken a long time. And Transport for London, which is part of the Mayor of London's tools, has been leading this. And, you know, I'm not convinced by every aspect of it, I have to say. Overall, it can be really, really good. But some of the designs need to really follow best practice, and that is developing. So I'm hoping that we can get this right. I'm hoping that we can promote cycling, but also make sure that the highest standards of safety are kept.
What would you like to see on Kingston's roads?
Safety more than anything else. Safety for everybody. And we're all looking at the highway code proposals that the Conservative government have put forward to see how they can be made to work. I would just urge people, if they have a cycle lane, please use the cycle lane. I think people get a little bit irritated when cyclists don't use the cycle lane. It's really important that, having made that provision, using the money that Transport for London and Mayor Johnson gave the borough, that these lanes are used.
But cars are allowed to park in these cycle lanes. So is that something that you think should end?
Well, I'm not aware of that. I have a cycle lane directly outside my house, and we're certainly not allowed to park in that. So I'm not aware of what you've said. Well, I'm surprised at that, I have to say. I'd have to look at the details of that. I would have thought that would be against best practice. So I think whether it's Transport for London or someone else, they need to explain that to people, because it does look odd on the face of it.
Fair enough. Another one of Kingston's swimming pools could be about to close because of an alleged issue with its roof. The Maldon Centre swimming pool is possibly due to close temporarily for 2 weeks over the February half term. This is very similar to what happened to the Kingfisher as well, and it means that some families will be without a single publicly owned swimming pool in the borough. What is your reaction to this?
Well, I'm told that this is very, very temporary. And it's very different from what happened to Kingfisher. Kingfisher had been needing repairs for many years. And unfortunately, the last council failed to repair it. And it was very serious and hugely expensive. Therefore, the decision has been taken to replace it. As I understand what's happening in New Maldon, it's a very temporary closure. We're talking about one or 2 weeks, as I understand it. So like many people who are listening to this, my family goes swimming an awful lot. We rely on swimming pools, and we don't want to see them closed, but we also want to make sure they're safe, of course. So I understand this is about a safety issue, and that they can sort it out very quickly, which is good news.
If it turns out to be worse than we think it is, do you have any advice for families in Kingston?
Well, my advice is to make sure that it's not a long-term problem. I'm being told on good authority that it will take just a week or two to sort this out. And we need to make sure that it only does take a week or two. It's essential that people have access to pools. I'm told they will do once these this short-term maintenance is done.
Okay, excellent. That's everything I wanted to ask. Is there anything you would like to mention?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
Excellent. And is there anything you would like to talk about next month?
I think there's a lot going on in improving schools that we could talk about. There's a really good story on local schools in every part of the borough, actually. So that would be a good story to go to discuss. You know, we've got everything from the new special needs school in Chessington to the really improved performance of Chessington School, which is really quite exciting. And then further up the borough, you've got the new primary school on the borders of Tolworth and Surbiton, which is now going to the next stage, which is fantastic. We've got the new secondary school, which has been really progressing well in Norbiton, and then the proposals for the new expanded primary in Burlington, in on Burlington site in New Malden. So it's unfortunately people in the past didn't push ahead with these. They got really bogged down in the dreadful free school saga, which is, you know, it's been an absolute disaster. But fortunately, in the last 2-3 years, the council's got a grip of it and really motoring ahead. So that's a fantastic news, to be honest. It's the when you look at all the different things that were needed to be fixed in the borough, this is probably right at the top of the list, and at long last it's being fixed, so that's great news.
Absolutely. Okay, I've noted that down. Is there anything else?
We could do I don't know whether I have the update yet for it, because it may go into the following month, but we're doing a lot of work on the Hogsmill sewage site and the potential for that to produce renewable heat. Yeah. This is the energy story, because you know, I was Secretary of State for Energy. I really pushed district heating systems, which can be used for by renewable heat. And we've been pushing one for the new Cambridge Road Estate, but also linked to the hospital, the new school, the new leisure centre. And it'd be a massive project, it'd be almost a world-leading project, but it's very exciting. And you know, I've had a whole series of meetings last year with the Chief Executive of Thames Water. Thames Water and RBK are working very closely on this. And what I'm hoping will happen is there'll be a proper project board set up in the not too distant, which will take a little while to scope this out fully, because we're talking billions, not billions, millions of pounds, and a massive change. But it's really quite exciting. It's basically the way forward for net zero, making sure people don't have to use gas for heating. And in the context of these high gas prices and Ukraine and so on, I think that's important. Oh, by the way, that's another subject we should talk about. You should talk about Ukraine. It won't have gone away in a month's time. I don't know how it'll be developed, but it will be there. So I think Ukraine definitely. I'm doing a campaign, just really starting it, on NHS dentists. So we can talk about that if you like.
What specifically about NHS dentists?
Well, the lack of them, and the way that existing NHS dentists are treated. So I went to visit a NHS dentist in New Malden, having picked up a little bit of what was going on. I'm clearly quite shocked, actually. The government had really almost ignored dentists, and they've had one of the toughest times of medical practitioners during the pandemic, because inevitably, given you're looking in someone's mouth and the aerosol comes out and you're very close quarters, it was quite a dangerous, at the height of it, quite a dangerous thing. And they've had to, some have had to close for quite a long time. That was had impacts on some constituents. We had people saying that they were in great pain and they could only get Zoom advice. So it's been a bit of a story, and it's left the dental sector in real problems. I've asked some parliamentary questions about this, and we found through digging that I've done that there'd been a big exodus of people from the profession, and the government doesn't, again, really do anything about it. So when I talk to constituents about health issues, you'd be surprised how much dentistry comes up, and how much people have to pay for it, because it's very expensive, and their frustration that they can't get into an NHS dentist. And when I was talking to these people over in New Malden, they were saying, you know, they get phoned almost by the hour, people begging to be able to come onto their books. So I think one of those issues which doesn't get talked a lot about, but actually has massive, people are really, really upset by. So I've been picking that up, and I just thought I should do some work on it, which is I've started, as you can tell, by visiting people, talking to people, asking parliamentary questions. Mm. But it's something that I want to work up and see if we can get some pressure put on the government.
Absolutely. I remember one of my friends tried to get an NHS dentist, and he said he called up every dentist in Sussex and couldn't get one. So, yeah, you're right. Well, it's a massive problem.
It is. Things improved around here a while ago. I don't know whether it's population growth or the pandemic or whatever, but it's now become a big issue again. I don't think it's really reached the level of attention that it needs.
Okay, excellent. Well, in that case, I'll speak to you next month then.
Great stuff. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you. Bye-bye. Goodbye.